This is the Galaxy Wars podcast with your host, The Grays. Greetings, welcome back to another episode of the Galaxy Wars podcast with your hosts, Jim and Tom. And happy November, or whenever you're listening to this. We have finally entered the Christmas season, Tom. Have you noticed that on all the websites that I've been on and all of the social media, is everyone's like, Merry Christmas. It is November 1st.
No, I haven't, but I know I have to get my Christmas trees out and my decorations out. So, you know.
Yeah, at least 5 of the 12 Christmas trees that you have, right?
I do have a Christmas tree for every room, I think, so.
Which is amazing. I'm going to get a new Christmas tree this year, so I'm very excited. First time, I think, since Chelsea and I moved into our apartment that we haven't had a hand-me-down tree.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So I'm very excited. But Halloween has passed. We have seen each other on Halloween, both of which celebrate it in 2 different costumes each.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I wore my Smedium Chewbacca suit and my Beef Squatch, and you were a monk and another Care Bear?
Yes.
So it was a fandom Halloween for both of us, but we have a fun episode today. We're going to review the first episode of The Mandalorian. We're going to review a movie that is based on science to be the scariest movie of all time, and yeah. I won't talk about what that movie is until we get to it. In fact, the title's not even going to say what movie it is. So it's a mystery until probably halfway through the episode. But
it's a trick, if you will.
Yes, and I have the article.
The last trick of October.
We can't say this is the last trick of 2020.
No,
this is.
I don't even want to think about it.
Hell of a year. But what I will say is before we get into it, this week Chelsea and I watched a lot of TV. It's been rainy over here, as you know. Yeah. I watched Witches, the new one.
Oh yeah. I have no interest, but I did see it out there, and I was wondering how it was.
I enjoyed it. It was it wasn't as good as the Angelica Houston one.
Okay.
But it was fun, and I think it opens up the world of Dahl to the newer children's age, I guess, the new age of children. So it was fun. It looks like it could spin off into a series or maybe a sequel out of it, but we'll see. I watched the new Borat movie.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
Fun. Like somebody mentioned it, he was so sad. And I think the original Borat's the same way. It's you forget for a minute, you're like, oh, this is funny, and then you're like, oh yeah, this is like a political commentary and all this is real. Like, oh yeah. People suck.
It's crazy to think that like some of those people had no idea that was Borat.
Right. Or that he was famous and he was trying to run from him.
Yeah. And like, I saw the deleted scene that he revealed on Colbert where he, after he performed the COVID song, he had to be ushered off stage because people started to know it was him. And he was like held captive for a second barricaded in an ambulance. And you hear him, like, you see the fear in his eyes, and you hear everybody outside, like, screaming, like, get out. It was crazy.
Well, I mean, this is the November 1st, right?
Yeah.
That we're recording. I mean, just 2 days ago, a day ago, they ran Biden's bus off of the street. You know, Trump, you know, we're staying slightly apolitical here, but I mean, it's a thing that happened, and it's his target audience or his target demographic. But they just ran him off the road. With guns and stuff, and you know, everybody in Texas has got a pickup. So, you know, it's a real thing, and it's scary. You know, it's fun laughing at Borat, especially the period scene.
Oh my God. It's disgusting. It was the most disgusting. I would have rather him been in that bathing suit the entire movie than that scene.
The chair that was made out of his friends. There's a lot of funny parts, and then you're like, oh, yeah, man, that's right. America does suck in some ways, and it's yeah. hard to change. So
yeah, I'll tell you what, man. I'm ready for the next 3 days to kind of go by pretty quickly, so I don't have to see these political campaigns anymore.
Yeah.
And, like, find out, like, the last time Biden was office, milk was $3.85. Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks for reminding me. We know. Also, I watched, out of all the three movies that I've watched this week, this one was my favorite and is front runner for probably my favorite movie of the year. It's called Love and Monsters.
I didn't see that one.
It's got Dylan O'Brien from The Maze Runner, Jessica Henwick, who played Colleen Wing as in the Iron Fist, and Michael Rooker.
All right. Don't know any of them.
It's a post-apocalyptic survival movie where this asteroid goes off and all the cold-blooded animals become mutated monsters.
Okay.
And everybody had to live underground because they were getting attacked by insects and frogs and snakes. And it was really good. It had a lot of heart. It was creative. It was a fun story from start to finish.
I don't know anything about that one, but
It's on VOD.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a fun one, but I'm not going to spoil it because I want people to watch it. It's fun to finally see like a new movie that is just fresh and like could have been released in the theaters, but probably would have been a dud in the theaters. And you know, you make garbage.
It's fresh. It's not a remake of anything, or
yeah. I think that I've never seen anything like this.
Okay, I'm looking at it. It's kind of without seeing it, it gives me the. What was that zombie show? It was about the young kids.
Oh, Daybreak.
Daybreakers. Daybreak, right. Or one or the other. It kind of gives me that vibe little bit. I actually like Daybreak, even though it got canceled. I was a big fan of that.
Yeah, I think you would like this one. I also think Binks would like this one. This is a fun little... it's a buddy show. I think it was cute, but let's go into the main meat and potatoes of our episode. And we got two reviews, one TV, one movie, and we finally the reason why we all kept our Disney Plus subscription
wasn't Mulan.
No, it was not Mulan. Disney Plus, the Mandalorian season 2 premiered this weekend. We got the first episode, Chapter 9, The Marshal. Yeah. And we're going to spoil it because, my God, what a fantastic way to start.
So spoilers starting right now. Timothy Oliphant was in it. I'm sure everybody knew he was coming. But the Marshall's perfect for him. He just played the guy from Justified.
Yeah.
Basically.
In Mandalorian armor.
Yeah. I think it's the same exact. It's basically the same exact story from Justified, and we had talked you don't think there'll be much. We'll see much more of them. I don't know about that. I from that last clip, I actually don't even want to spoil that part. The very last.
We're gonna have to.
Yeah, that's such a. That makes me think we're spending some time on Tatooine.
I'd be fine with that, honestly.
Oh yeah. I mean,
because like that's their connecting points for all the old school Star Wars fans. They're like, oh my God, we're on Tatooine. I know Tatooine. They got two sons.
Yeah. So but that last 10 seconds makes me think they're not leaving anytime soon, or they're going to pick up another hitchhiker or pick up another, guy to their group. So,
all right. If they pick someone up, who are they picking up? Do you think it's Cobb Vanoth or Vanth who Oliphant played, or do you think they pick up the mystery figure that we'll talk about towards the end of this?
I think it's the mystery figure.
I think so too, because
I think he's
Cobb,
gonna play
he has
a big...
to protect the village.
Yeah. And he's a true Mandalorian. Well, the mystery figure is a Mandalorian, so he's
could be.
Yeah.
This could be it could be a huge red herring, and I guess we'll do it now because we're going to spoil it regardless. But at the end, you see Timur Morrison, and at the IMDb says that he's supposed to be Boba Fett, like he's credited as Boba Fett,
or he could be one of two things: he could be Boba Fett, or he could be a stormtrooper.
I think he's like, I would like him to start out as Rex, and then you command a Rex, and then you see another version of Temuera Morrison as Boba Fett.
Well, I think both are great stories, actually. I think as if it's Boba Fett, I mean, that's awesome. That's the armor's out there, and it's another true Mandalorian to talk to. If it's Rex, that leads us right into Ahsoka. So
yeah, and we know she's coming.
Yeah.
It would, I'm very curious to see how that plays out, and if we'll figure that out in episode two.
Right.
This one had so much like nostalgic Easter eggs in it, like from jump, like Mos Eisley was referenced. The dragon, the crate dragon. Yeah. We've seen that when C-3PO is walking through the desert, like that was the skeleton of a crate dragon. The Tusken Raiders and the Banthas, like that was. I think that was my favorite part, was like the deep dive into the Tuskens and into the Banthas.
Yeah, having like the Tuskens and the Banthas having like this symbiotic relationship where they, you know, almost like with the crate dragon, and that's kind of this was Western theme, but it has these like fantasy elements. It's got this real life dragon, and they're sacrificing things to the dragon to keep it from eating, you know, the Tusken Raiders, and also in a way protects the town that they're at odds with. So I think that thing is pretty neat, how it has like these fantasy elements to it, like seamlessly with, you know, while they're storytelling this great Western.
Yeah. Yeah. And they made this episode fantastic without relying heavily on the child, because I feel like going into season two, you're gaining so much more fandom because of the child. So you're getting casual television viewers who now want to watch Mandalorian because of Baby Yoda, because it's so cute, because they have the merch and the pajama pants and everything. And in this episode, the child took the backseat to everything.
And yeah, it's a good point. Is I was constantly watching and waiting. I mean, you see the child like do some cool stuff, like it hides itself once it's in, you know. The Gamorreans are fighting, and
that was awesome. That scene was great.
Yeah, but because we know that it has, it's got the Force, or it uses the Force itself. I was waiting for it, and then they didn't do it. I wasn't like, it would have made no difference if he used it. I would just been like, all right, great. But I was anticipating it, and when they didn't use it, I was like, oh, okay. You know, it's not going to be a crutch that they lean on every episode Mando can get himself out of trouble. He doesn't need to rely on the child for like the big stuff and the Force stuff. So
yeah, and he definitely got himself out of some trouble.
Right.
He did the old, kind of what happened to Boba back in the day when the jetpack malfunctioned. He did that again to show like, listen, I do my homework. I know what happens, and Timothy Oliphant flies away, and he goes and watches the kid, and then he does, like, Boba just goes like Jonah and the whale, like, right through it, and just blows him up. I thought the crate dragon kind of looked like a blobfish a little bit for me.
Yeah, we've heard of him.
Yeah, we've just seen a skeleton of him.
Yeah, and, well, that's the only visual we've ever had, but they've talked about him in the books, and he gives you, like, what do we know on Tatooine? We know the thing that you have to look out for is the giant Sarlacc. Yep. And he tells us right away, like, oh, he ate a Sarlacc. It's like it's giving us proportionality. Like, this is how badass the crate dragon is. So
yeah, and then, like, you see how big it is just from, like, the ripples that it does. Like, kind of like a tremor. Remember the Kevin Bacon movie Tremors? And as he's going through, they finally get to the cave, and they're like, we got to wake it up. They bring the Bantha down, and it just goes like, all right, I don't want this Bantha. I want to eat the sand person. And they eat the sand person, and then you see how huge it is, and you're like, oh, my God. Like, we need more. We need the recruits. And I really like that they included, like, a focus on the city, too, because they're showing, like, what was happening after the second Death Star blew up.
Right, yeah.
They're giving you a live feed of, you know, just because you've seen the main players, this is a huge galaxy, this is what happened when it blew up. We were here getting drunk, and as soon as we were celebrating, it's kind of like the Saints game is on, right? So it's kind of like the Saints win a Super Bowl and then Katrina happens, then they're in the parade.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's what happened. Well, yeah, with them.
It shows that, you know, there's a, as soon as they, there was a power vacuum and
yeah,
there was nobody to protect their interest. Whether, okay, they were living in like maybe a gilded cage, but the Empire protected them to a certain degree from pirates.
The miners.
The miners in this case. And then once that, you know, the Empire left, you know, it was like lawless. Anybody could come in. Tatooine was nearly lawless anyway, and now it's even worse when there's no, you know, the Empire's gone. So yeah, it just goes to show that it wasn't all, you know, peaches.
Was freed after the rebellion ended. After, you know, the Empire was taken down. Let's go to the beginning for a second, because we kind of mentioned the Gamorreans fighting, which was fantastic, a little UFC match going on. And I'm watching it with Chelsea, and Gore Koresh shows up, right? The broker with the one eye. And I'm sitting there, and Chelsea goes, "That sounds like John Leguizamo." I'm like, "No way." I go to IMDb, it's John Leguizamo.
Oh, I didn't even know. Yeah, he did sound familiar, but, you know, now that I think about it, it does sound like him. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't even put two and two together. I was like, there's no way John Leguizamo is in this universe. And he pops right up, and I'm like, oh, you got to be kidding me.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, I thought that was good. But I also think, like, I don't know, man. That last scene, like, shifts everything for me. Because I was like, where do we go from here? Because we've seen the trailer and we see Sabine, Sasha Banks, who we think is Sabine. We don't know when we're going to get to her. So maybe that's like six episodes down the way. We know Ahsoka's coming. We know Bo-Katan's coming. There's rumors that Ezra's coming. There's rumors that there's Boba Fett or Captain Rex or whoever. Where do we go from here? What do you think is happening in episode two?
I have no idea. That's it. I have no idea. I don't know where they're going to go. I don't know who. Their only goal now is to get him to his home planet, the child.
Yeah.
And as far as we know, from having Yoda involved in it for so long, we don't know anything about his home planet. Yep. No, we've never seen it. They never gave it to us. This is pretty rare. So I don't know. I don't know how this tracks. We know that the remnants of whatever the Empire is now is still after them. I think it'll, we have to deal with that. We have to deal with the Dark Saber.
We definitely have Moff Gideon doing, like, we don't know. We no mention of Moff Gideon at all.
Right. So we don't know. We don't know what they're going to do. Like, this is all brand new and fresh, so we don't know if they're going to rebuild his crew like he did in the, like, he basically built a crew in the first season, but that crew is gone. So we don't know if he's going to go back to that. We know everybody that's supposed to show up in this, I don't know how many episodes, but it's going to be one of those things they better start showing up fast or... But it's fine. And like you said, we don't know if we have Rex or Boba. We don't know. Rex leads us directly into, I think, Ahsoka. And, he gets to talk about Order 66 a little bit, maybe.
Yeah.
And he's dealt with, if that's Rex, and we're talking about what is canon, he has in canon fought next to Yoda.
Yeah.
In the Clone Wars, he fought with Yoda. So, he might
that
know.
That would make more sense.
Yeah. Yeah, he knows a lot about, he would know something. It seems like everybody's forgotten about Yoda and the Jedi to a certain extent. And it's kind of, galactically, it looks like it's kind of a myth.
Yeah.
Which and, I think is, that's a weird thing to me, but that they don't really believe in it. I don't know.
And we all focused on in the trailer the mention of the Jedi being sorcerers. And everyone was like, oh my God, like, we've never heard that. That came in season one.
Yeah.
And like, I guess it was just because we were so hyped up about season one and how that the finale was going that we overlooked that. But like, that was like a big point for the armorer said when Emily Swallow, when she was saying like, this is the way, like, everybody laid down their armor, they left. What if, because we know who's coming, what if the twist is, and if there is a twist, that there's a disgruntled Mandalorian who was forced to put down his armor and his identity, and is now, he wants blood.
Just as equally as likely, there is going to have to be a point. Not all Mandalorians agreed with you know, the way. There were Mandalorians that went their own way. And yeah, there might be Mandalorians that lost touch. And who knows? Who knows how the clones see themselves now? The Empire is gone. And, you know, most of them were supposed to be dead, but some of them were resistant. And who knows? I mean, like, how do they see themselves? Do they see themselves as clones, or have they, in the last, like, 25 years, kind of developed a little? Yeah. I mean, they all developed personalities because they were given numbers and they were given ranks and stuff like that. But I don't know what's left. What can I do now? Yeah.
Well, I know when you were talking about this, like, if it's Rex, it leads us to Ahsoka. On the other point, if it's Boba Fett, could lead us to a couple things. It could lead us to a really disgruntled old ex-bounty hunter, right, fought a Sarlacc, defeated a Sarlacc multiple times. And kind of is reminiscent of what we saw in The Last Jedi with Luke, and says, you know what, kid, just get out of here. I don't want the armor. Let Cobb have it. Do what you want. But what I can do is I can give you information. And that could lead to two people. It could lead to Sabine, if that's truly who Sasha Banks is, and says, like, listen, you want information on the Darksaber and these Jedis. I know somebody who's very, very close to both. You need to find Sabine, right? If it's not Sabine, that leads you to Bo-Katan, who also has ties to Sabine and Ahsoka and the clones. So they go to Bo-Katan first, and he finds Bo-Katan, a former, like, the leader of the Mandos during the Clone Wars. And that leads you on the goose chase to kind of have this team-oriented, like, formed, I guess, the team formed with, you know, Bo, Sabine, Ahsoka, whoever else you want to throw on there. That's my thoughts. But then I keep thinking, like, I get a little cynical. Like, episodes two is just going to be back with Grief and Kara.
Yeah, well, I didn't want to mention, like, I don't know how much Kara is going to be in this.
They're talking about a spinoff.
Yeah. She had her moments of, you know, I don't know. Politically, she had some hiccups in Twitterverse, which everybody has. So I don't know. Yeah, it's I don't know, man. Like, he does need a crew eventually.
Yep.
I think that's the way it goes. And if Rex is holding out with a small cadre of former clones, or well, they're still clones, but former stormtroopers, and maybe that's what he you know, maybe they get used in this. I don't know.
It would be crazy if Boba Fett found Rex somehow, and instead of saying, I am the greatest bounty hunter in the world, he just says, you know, I served during the Clone Wars, I was number do, and just assumes his personality and his identity, and just tries to, like, live his life off the grid, away from the mythos of him.
Right.
I really want to, like, I want the first scene of episode two to be Temuera Morrison walking through wherever, like, walking through Tatooine. Yeah. Maybe he was disguised as a sand person, Tusken Raider, during the whole party. He was there with them, and then that's how he's been living his life. I want explanations on that, but I think we're going to get a...
You do see, whoever this is carrying...
He's got the blaster.
So I think everybody is on the Boba Fett train, thinking, oh my God, it's Boba Fett. Yeah. But I think they do forget that Boba Fett is actually a clone too.
Yep.
You know, he, and from you know, the second trilogy, we learn that he's a clone, and that's what all the stormtroopers look like him. So I think we gotta. It might be a lot of work for what's his face. He might be playing. He might be doing the clumps and playing 30 parts, but I don't know. I think it's great. To me, that's like that. It's the writing that we expect. Like the first season gave us a lot of, you know, false starts and not in a bad way, but it gave us a lot of like twist. But it weren't twist. It was just like it was like sleight of hand. We're making you think this, but we're actually doing this. I think we can't ever sell them short. That's what this could be. It could be them. Yeah. You know, we're in a Boba Fett armor storyline, and we see what looks like Boba, but could be Rex or another of his crew, because they were on Tatooine, they fought in the Clone Wars with Yoda. I don't know. It could be. It could lead anywhere. We never know.
Yeah. All we know is that it's Temuera Morrison, and he's going to be playing somebody because he's there.
Canonically, do we know if Yoda ever knew where he was from?
I don't know. I mean, the only spot that we got was Dagobah.
But that's where he chose to die because it masked his force signature. But it doesn't, like, I don't remember in the books ever hearing about he really knows where he's from.
Yeah,
he's like 900 something years old at the time that he passes. So I don't know. I don't know if he was kidnapped or enslaved, because, you know, both the light and the dark do a lot of like kidnapping. They just call a different thing. Yep. The light will like, well, I'll buy your son for some shekels or whatever. And the dark just decides to kidnap him.
He'll be an apprentice.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know where he like. You know, where if he knows where he came from. Because I don't know if that information's ever been put out there for... This might be all brand new territory for the child, so...
Yeah, I think it is. I don't know if we're ever going to... At least this season. I don't know if we're going to see this season play out the way we want it to. I think it's going to end in season where they're like, okay, we know where we're going. Now how to get there. I think the Razor Crest is going to get blown up. He's going to be stranded on a planet. And it could be Tatooine.
Yeah. Well, I kind of along those lines, I think he might get coordinates somewhere along the line and still not know where to go. Like,
what if they're from Kessel? You know what I mean? That's got so much
like
mythos.
In Kessel. Yeah.
Yeah.
We saw a little bit of that in what's
Solo.
Yeah. Who knows? Like,
yeah, I mean, that would be a great point. Like, for season three, they could bring Emphas Nest back, who kind of stood out there in Solo. But who knows? What do you give this episode?
It's a 10. I don't know. It's the highest we can give it. It's a 5 out of 5, I guess. I don't know. It's good.
We'll give it a 10 because I had a 5 and you had a 5. So it was damn near perfect. It was a fantastic start of season.
I can't think of anything. Like I said, They ended on a cliffhanger, and we don't know what's happening, which is how cliffhangers should work. This is still pretty original storytelling. It's given us nods and winks. The lore that we're getting, like the expansion of the lore of like with the crate dragon and the fact that he's conversing, and there's, you know, the sand people they've been kind of like bigoted against throughout all of this, and shit, what's his name kills like a whole tribe, Anakin. So I don't know. I mean, it's cool that they're introducing the Sand People in a different way, and he's, you know, conversing, and it had me thinking, which is a weird thing, I didn't Google it, I could have, but I wanted to, but what do the Sand People look like under their...
Yeah, I saw a video come up on my feed that said, like, what do they look like? And I didn't click on it because I don't want to be spoiled. Because, like, I'm sure they're just regular humans that, like, wear breathing apparatuses because of the sand. It's very Dune-like, but they're just a little scarier looking than the people of Dune.
Yeah, maybe.
The way that they treated the Tusken Raiders in this this episode was very similar to the way the Jawas were represented in season one. So I like that Jon Favreau pays attention to like the fan. Like I loved the Tusken Raider toy when I was a kid. Like it came with extra weapons. It was like it had the removable robe. I thought that that was awesome. And like it seems like Jon Favreau was like, I remember getting that Kenner toy, and that one was dope. I want to pay attention to that. Like we saw it with the
It does kind of have the feel that he's writing from the descriptions on the back of the Kenner toys. Like he's just reading the background going, it'd be cool if that guy got an episode. And that's kind of how it feels in a good way, in a very good way.
Yeah, he's bringing back like the Jawas and the Dubaks and Banthas and the mention of the Sarlacc. So it was fantastic. But we could talk about this all day. But let's go to a movie that I saw this article. It came out October 20th on Nerdist. And I was like, okay, so I like science. You like science. When we started this podcast, we were thinking of doing like breakdowns on science within science fiction. But we're not that. We don't have that much time. But this says that a scientific study was conducted to determine which horror movie is actually the scariest. And it says the answer you might genuinely shock you. And it certainly did because the movie we're going to review, once I say it in a minute, I don't think is the scariest movie I've ever seen.
And it's based off of heart rates heart rate, the increase of heart rate on average across the film. I mean, I have ideas of how they got there, but I mean, we'll talk about that.
Yeah. So the article says this study conducted by Broadband Choices tracked the heart rates of 50 people of different ages who watched over 100 hours of scary movies, which ironically, I think I signed up for this. I wanted to be part of this. A year ago.
Oh, really?
And they never got back to me, but I see why. After that exhaustive research, they were able to narrow down a list of what they concluded as the 25 or 35 most terrifying movies ever made, and the results will probably surprise you. You can see so the top movie was Sinister.
Yep.
Which is what we're going to review. It was released in 2012, directed by Scott Derrickson, who went on to do Doctor Strange. He also liked one of my Instagram posts, so a little humble brag. But the resting heartbeat going into Sinister was 65 beats per minute. And then the average during the movie was 86, which leaves you with a 32 beats per minute difference. And the highest spike during Sinister was 131 during the biggest jump scare. Did you happen to see this list of what movies made the top 35?
After I watched it, I don't agree with any of it. I'm looking at this, and none of these movies have done the thing that it says it's done for me. Like,
yeah, I totally agree. So I'll do the top 10, and then I'll do some that stand out. So one was Sinister, two is Insidious, three is The Conjuring, four Hereditary, five Paranormal Activity, six It Follows, seven The Conjuring 2, eight our favorite The Babadook, nine The Descent, and 10 The Visit. And then if you go a little bit further, you go like our Mount Rushmores of slashers. 13 was Nightmare on Elm Street, 14 Halloween, 15 Texas Chainsaw. So back to back to back to back.
And the Exorcist, Friday the 13th,
28.
So that's kind of crazy.
And then you have It at 19, Scream at 20, The Exorcist at 17, The Witch at 22, your ultimate horror movie, The Thing, at 25, and then like Get Out's at 34, The Shining 33, and so on. So when I saw this, I was like, this is interesting. Let's do this. So I watched it again. I had seen Sinister. I saw Sinister in theaters. This is a type of movie that Chelsea is 100% on board with. Love Sinister, The Conjuring, the Annabelle, Insidious, all that stuff. She loves this. I liked this movie. Into it, I liked it a lot when I watched it. And then when I watched it again, I was like, this is a very creepy movie.
Yeah. It's got this the sustained rate of tension. Maybe, and I think that's where it comes from. Is It's got like a jump scare when he kind of figures out what's going on the video, videos that are in the attic. You know, it's that, I think that's the only really big jump scare there is. And even towards the end, it's that's it. But it's got like, I think there's a lot of tension just sustained throughout the whole thing. And it hits you a lot. Like, there's a lot going on. Like every time he goes to sleep or the family goes to sleep, he wakes up and watches these movies, and it's constant. And you're constantly waiting for something to happen.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, as you're watching this, like, it's not that you're scared, but you're uncomfortable. Yeah. Because you're watching it through Ethan Hawke's eyes. So this was like right at the resurgence of Ethan Hawke. Like, he did this, he did The Purge, and then he hasn't stopped acting. Like, I was going through his IMDb's, and he's been working ever since. But you're watching him. He plays Ellison Oswald, who's a writer, and you're watching him just again watch those home videos that are labeled like fun in the park, pool time with daddy, yard work, you know, stuff like that. And you're watching
it's weird how he never goes, where do all these videos come from of the murder scenes? And his kind and of like his hubris, like he wanted to become famous off of this. That's, I mean, he's like the perfect victim. That's why he didn't call the police and say, oh, I got a bunch of evidence in my attic. I don't know how it got there.
He wanted to write his In True Blood or In Cold Blood. And he's watching these religiously. And, you know, they start off really happy, home videos. And then it's, you know, footage of a family getting hung and the tree cutter, the saw, is cutting by itself. And he writes down, where's Stephanie? He doesn't write down who the hell's cutting the tree.
Right.
He's like, where's Stephanie? And who's filming it? Like, that's a question I would ask. But then it's, you know, cars on fire. Then
and that's, we meet the angry sheriff at the beginning. And I was, I had never seen this movie. And I was kind of thinking he was going to be the guy. And it was not going to be a supernatural thriller, but a thriller of some sort. And he was going to be the guy that filmed all these or something like that. But I kind of like it did go into supernatural, but for a very long time, it sits on a fence for me. Like, it could have been a real thing. These could have been
a serial killer.
Yeah. A serial killer or a cult killing. Not a cult. Well, it is a cult, but a cult of, you know, that passes it down.
Yeah, the way that they're working from it. They said, I know James Ransom, who is the star of the second Sinister movie, he said at the end of the movie when he was talking to Ethan Hawke, he says it starts in Oregon, works its way to Sacramento, then San Diego, all the way over to St. Louis. Now they're in Pennsylvania. Right. So, and like it was weird. Like, it definitely had that track of a cross country killer.
Yeah.
And we come to find out it's Bagul, the eater of children, or the devourer of children.
I did kind of know. I had a good idea of who it was going to be, but only because they gave you that. They force-fed you and said, look, one of these kids is going to kill the family at some point.
Yeah.
And that's what happens. But it's not like the scariest thing I've ever seen. I just think it's a sustained rate of tension that keeps you like maybe keeps the elevated heartbeat.
You think that the biggest jump scare was towards the end where he figures it out?
I think it's I'm looking at the thing. I got a different graphic maybe than you. I have the Nerdist graphic up, and they say it's like 1 hour and it looks like 1 hour and five or 1 hour and 10. And I think that's when what's the murders? We have
the lawnmower.
Yeah, the lawnmower. Where you're following him for like 5 minutes, going through everything. I think that's the jump scare, because that's where it just starts screaming.
Yeah, I either thought it was that one, or now that it's an hour, I don't think this one applies. But I thought that it would have been when Trevor comes out of the box, when he's like folded up in that cardboard box.
That peaks too, if I'm looking, because that looks like it's like around 40 minutes, and I do remember that happening. And he looked like that scene looked like Sleepaway Camp. You ever watch Sleepaway Camp?
Yeah.
And at the end, where she just the cross dressing kid just starts screaming. That's what reminds me of. Here's my negatives about it. I'll say the kids were confusing to me because his daughter looked exactly like Stephanie.
Yeah. And looked like the little girl in the Gordon's Fisherman outfit.
Yeah, yeah. And then the son, kept getting the son confused with other, because it was a dark movie. It was you got very little light in the whole movie. Yeah. And the light that you did get was like, it was concentrated in certain areas. Like,
that was my least favorite part of the movie. It was too, I think it was too dark.
Yeah. I think it was an artistic choice to make sure that you knew where the event that you need to pay attention to happened. But, you know.
Yeah, but for me, it like,
I felt the same seconds, way.
It took my eyes off of the event that was happening to look around in the shadows. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
I was telling Chelsea when we were watching it, you know, the scene where he falls asleep with a baseball bat in his hand.
Yeah.
And like, you see the sunrise come through. I would have, and I'm not a movie, you know, I don't make movies, but if I were Scott Derrickson, I would have had Bagul's shadow in the picture window, standing there from the outside looking at him to kind of add to the suspense. But I understand why he did it. And, you know, obviously, like, listen, this was $3 million budget, made $84 million worldwide.
Yeah. And now like has distinction. And this came out October 20th, right? This article. So, I mean, that's of this year. When I was looking and I Googled it, I saw that, like, Hereditary got a, you know, that, like, a 2018 was the scariest movie based off of these criteria. And I didn't think that was scary at all. I didn't, like...
Not at all.
I wasn't a fan that was, of that one.
That's what we were talking about last week. That could make my top five artsy, fartsy horror movies that I don't like.
Yeah, yeah.
I think they tried too much with that.
Right. There was like, it wasn't... What I'm a fan of in this case was, it wasn't in an old house. It was in a 15-year-old house. It wasn't like a mansion or an old, like, rickety mansion and stuff. You know, it was... You were thinking a lot of these tropes would come up, like a haunted house, but it wasn't a haunted house. The house had really, I mean, had more to do with the family than the house. Like, so it wasn't a slasher. It wasn't a lot of gore. I wouldn't say there was any moment where you had to look away too much. I mean, there was the, you know, where they cut the throat, but that was like, it was out of focus. So. Yeah, this wasn't a gory movie. I don't even know if it was PG. I think it might have been PG-13, or it could have been at least. Yeah, it was. I just think it was a well done, suspenseful movie.
Yeah, I agree. I was talking to Chelsea about it today, and I was like, in a world where we're getting like the origins to Annabelle. Annabelle has like 75 origin movies. And, you know, every other movie gets their origin stories. I feel like this one could have really had a awesome origin story of Bagul. You know, it goes back to the Dark Ages. I would have liked to see something like that, of like kind of set in the Dark Ages where we first get to see Bagul. But I feel like what happened was Sinister 2 came out a couple years after that. But then Derrickson got Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I feel like that took him away from...
he got gobbled up. This is Blumhouse, right?
Yes. This is one of the first movies that kind of turned me on to watching all of Blumhouse stuff.
Yeah, they are doing good. Yeah, I think we could have gotten a Middle Ages... origin story or something. But... there was a lot of things, because I didn't say it. I was like, oh, you know, I did kind of at some point realize he lives in those tapes. Like, those tapes are important to him somehow. Or at least the because videos or the images.
Yeah, that's what D'Onofrio was saying. He said that it's not that he possesses the people. He possesses the images. And once you open your eyes to the... you know, the images, it's like opening the window to your soul, and he's able to come out and, you know, take over.
I thought, like, once he burnt those images, I thought the computer was going to become like the new vessel for him to be, because he downloaded everything. But no, I mean, other than that, like, it's not a complaint. It's just where my mind was going. But yeah,
that could have went crazy. Bagul on the cloud.
Yeah,
like he's just downloading everybody's houses.
It's like Jason X. He goes to space.
Yeah. Oh my god. So on this, he's like in everyone's Tesla.
Yeah, I the scientific thing is weird. I do get it. Like, I wasn't particularly scared by it, but I do get like there was a lot of tension, and I don't think I have a hard time getting scared by movies. Sometimes it's just the visuals I like to see. But I do get how this could get there. I understand that part, like the way that they use darkness and light and tension. I think it could easily make sense to me in some ways.
Yeah, it leaves you in a state of uneasiness the entire time, where you're just waiting on that jump scare, because you know, like, I can imagine being in that study and you're hooked up and you're just waiting to be frightened during these movies. And I think the criteria was, you haven't had to see most of these movies. Like, it was the first time seeing it. So, like, I saw 90% of that list. You know what I mean?
And
so, I don't think any of those made me jump.
No.
The Conjuring made me jump a few times. Just because I wasn't paying attention.
Okay. There's, like, this thing where he's losing control. And I got the Shining vibes from him. Because he's an author and he's losing control. And I had thought that was going to... And that's a thing is... It takes you down a lot of pathways, and you're like, oh, I know what's going to happen. I think he's going to get possessed, turn on his family or whatever. And you always think the kids are going to do, because that's what's disappearing. But he starts getting angrier and angrier and drinking. And you're getting the backstory of him, you know, he gets in too deep and he starts drinking. And then you see him start smoking. I'm like, oh, he's losing control. And then he actually turns it all around and kind of becomes the hero, and he gets his family out of the situation too late, and then, you know, daughter gets possessed. I think that all those things is places where you're like, oh, this is where it's going to happen, this is where we're going to see some, and it doesn't happen, and you move on to the next thing, or, you know, the next scene, and there's another elevation, and you're you know, waiting for the sun to flip out and kill somebody, or you know.
Which death did you think was the hardest one to watch on those tapes? If you had to watch that tape, which one was the hardest one for you?
I don't know. When the lady gets killed with the knife, she was watching as it was happening. Like, it looked like she couldn't move, though. That might have been the hardest. Because, like, the people that were hung had the bags over their head. I mean, it sucks. They were hung. I mean, it happened. But the lady with getting her the knife... You know, her throat slit and watching it happen. She was watching it happen. Was kind of crazy.
Yeah, I think for me it would have been the family tied to the lawn chairs.
Yeah,
and drug into the pool, because like I again the bag to your head, you kind of understand that you're not, you know it's coming, but you're not seeing it, I guess.
Yeah, that was like a mercy almost for them.
Yeah, the burning alive, like your nerve endings go away at a certain time, like they become numb. Drowning would have been the one for me.
I'm afraid of that too. I'm not afraid. I'm aware of it, and I'm aware that it sucks. But
And also, I would like to see but I think the other one would have been how Ethan Hawke's family was killed. Just watching a small little girl wield a very dull axe and like, based on the picture, she chopped neck, arms, torso, and legs multiple times.
Yeah,
just imagining her struggle. Cause like you saw all the blood up and down the walls, like that's not a mercy killing, like that's like
no,
you're
that
struggling.
I don't know what Sinister 2, you know, that would be the one, you know, like Sinister 2, you would see it, you would see that, like you've seen it with all the other ones, but that's how I would have done it. I don't know how it turned out, but
I can't remember Sinister 2. Chelsea had to tell me that it was James Ransom trying to stop a ghoul.
Okay.
Because the officer so-and-so put it together.
Yeah, he put it together at the end of this.
He was great in this.
Yeah, I thought he was going to be like comedic foil, you know, or comedic just, you know, like every relief. Horror movie has a comedy relief, but no, he wasn't. He was actually like a decent detective.
Yeah.
With like using some good psychology and stuff. So, yeah, I was kind of surprised by that. I guess it's all
right.
It put a lot of the tropes on its head. Like it didn't let you, like it didn't let anything like, you know, we're not going to rest on a slasher flick. We're not going to be anything. We're not going to be a trope. We're going to introduce all these tropes, but we're probably not going to use them all. And they didn't really.
Yeah. And listen, I think, Scott Derrickson proved himself in this one because I think this was the movie that got him his Marvel gig.
It could have been, yeah.
And he, you know, he is known for horror. I think he did The Day the Earth Stood Still. He did some other horror stuff, but once he did, he did the Haunting of Emily, or Last Exorcism of Emily Rose. Yeah. He did all that stuff, but he mastered that. He made it artsy, but not the witch. He made it, you know, not the Babadook. He made it his own touch, and then he went to Doctor Strange and mastered that trippy kind of mystical fantasy realm. So I'd like to see more of him. I'm kind of bummed that he's not doing Doctor Strange 2.
Yeah. You know, he would have been good at it, and he pulled this off well, or he pulled Doctor Strange off well. I think the direction they want to take Doctor Strange is probably something that he's not comfortable with. Like, they want to take him super trippy, you know, like, and introduce a lot of things. And not every director is going to be able to be comfortable saying, man, I can handle the time and the dimensions and this and that and wind up in different, you know, eras and different, you know, places. So it could be tough. Yeah. You never know.
I know when they first started talking about Doctor Strange 2, it was going to be a horror. It was going to be a horror flick. This was going to be the first Marvel horror movie. And then I think when he dropped out and they went with Sam Raimi, it kind of leads me to believe that it's going to be horror, but it's going to be kind of like goofy, trippy horror, which Sam Raimi is like, he's popularized and he's a master at. So either way, I think it's going to be fantastic. And I'm going to watch more of, I know he's got, Scott Derrickson's got a ton of movies coming out. He's doing The Outer Limits. He's doing a Labyrinth project.
Yeah.
Which is going to be awesome. So what do you give this movie?
I'm going to give it probably, I'll give it a 4.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a little predictability. You know, I knew his daughter was going to do it. That's really the only thing. I had a good time watching it. It wasn't the scariest movie I've ever seen, but, you know, kind of used to it. Like, the average person, I could see how this could maintain a pretty high level of anxiety for somebody.
Yeah, I'm going to go 4.5, even though I've seen it multiple times. It still holds up, man. I was looking at it, I was like, I can't believe this is 8 years old. But it still holds up. I think it's one of those movies that it's only going to gain more popularity now because of the study, and deservingly so. I'm glad that it was number one as opposed to, you know, the Babadook being number one or the Witch being number one. No disrespect to their directors, but I'm glad that it was a movie that I enjoyed that is number one.
Right. Yeah, that's a big deal too. I don't even know a scary part from the Babadook or the Witch.
The entire movie was horrifying because we wasted our time. Then time is obviously the biggest killer of humans.
I don't want we've said our piece. We'll probably say it again at some point, but we've said our piece about those. I don't know how like I mean I guess that's the best test is the pulse rate. I mean, what else are you going to measure?
I think it's science, man, and we are believers in science and we love science. So I'm glad that we finally got to do a scientific episode, albeit a horror movie. Who would have thought? Back to back horror weeks.
Yeah.
But that's it, man. We're gonna get out of here. We've got a series we're gonna break down next week. Truth Seekers on Amazon Prime. Awesome. I know you're a little ahead of me, which is surprising.
Yeah, for once.
Yeah, you're 3 episodes in. I have not yet started to watch it, but it's an Amazon series, and we've been pretty high on all the Amazon stuff that we've watched. So we'll see where we go. And it's got our boy Nick Frost in it. We love him, and Simon Pegg we love too. So, we'll review that. You can follow us on social media, the Galaxy Wars Podcast, wherever you're on social media. We're on all the podcast directories. Every Wednesday, we have the Active Geek podcast. I'm on YouTube, Super Late Show. And yeah, we'll be back next week. So here's $20. Buy yourself something nice.